That's. So the title of the talk today is Only Kindness Makes Sense. Only Kindness Makes Sense. And I have to say that it's a huge delight to teach with Simi and Sarit, because I have two mothers. And a little story last night, just want to illustrate this. I was ready to carry on after supper, whatever, to go to the to meet the volunteers, the staff, as we do in the evenings. And Simi came and said, "Go and rest." I thought, "Yeah, good idea." So I went to rest. It was a slight problem. For me, resting includes samadhi. So I went and sat in my room and practiced. And then it just took one moment where I really felt a lot of tiredness. Everything felt tired. And then one moment of samadhi, suddenly everything changed. And I was up and awake the whole night. I didn't sleep one minute. So it's a little story both about the mothering and about the power of samadhi. And I'm fine so far. Maybe in the middle of the talk. It has happened. I've seen teachers fall off the stage before. So and this morning I have to say, this amazing change of everything. Waking up and seeing the chatzavim here. And you feel, yes, it's hot, yes, it's the middle of August, but there's a chatzav there. And just see this amazing transformation of everything. So I think this is a good starting point for a talk, because we experience all the time the ups and the downs of life. It never stops. One moment up, one moment down, and up, and down, and up, and down, and sometimes the up is a tsunami, and sometimes the down is a tsunami, and sometimes they're little waves just like this. But it's kind of good to know that the ups and the downs are raw material, chomer gelim, that's our practice. They're not just things we have to put up with. Litmoded im. Chom v'chatzavim. That's the basis of our practice. And when we are engaged with the practice of ups and downs in our life, something opens in us that is bigger than the up and the down. And that's really something just to take home with you as a message. You know, if we engage, dance with, know, and in this case, this retreat, also with the heart, the ups and the downs, something opens in our life. One of my favorite quotes about this. This talk tonight is full of quotations, okay, and stories. That's just what came up. So there's a quote that I love from William Blake that says, "Man was made for joy and woe." Woe is pain, is dukkha. Man was made for joy and pain and woe. And when this we rightly know, means awareness. We fully know. Through the world we safely go. Joy and woe, joy and dukkha, pain or struggle, are woven fine. I mean, they weave, is a thread that weaves clothing for the soul divine. So he says, joy and pain are the threads from which we make our cloth for our divine soul. Our neshama, Torah, or neshama, Elohut, in that language. It's made from that stuff. That's what we work with. So it's really important to kind of really know deeply that we're not in charge of our experience. We can't design our experience. We can't design our life. As the Buddha said to Patachara, do you know why you're here? Do you know why your child is here? Do you know why you were born? Do you know why you die? Step back and know that we can't control our experience. A little bit, we can shift here and there, but basically what happens to us is karma, is what arises. And what we can do is we choose what we do with it, and what we build with the chomagelem azeh of our experience. What is it we build? What do we do with it? And as William Blake said, this is the raw material for liberation. This is our raw material. This is the stuff we have to work with. This experience, that experience, this up, this down. That's what we have to work with. And there, if we work with it, is our liberation. The soul divine, as William Blake said. And it's the first noble truth, yes. We do experience suffering, meeting, experience of being in a body. Not all the time, thankfully, but it does happen. And we do experience freedom. Not all the time, but it happens. The first noble truth and the third noble truth are truths. They're not fantasies. That's the first teaching of the Buddha. We cannot run away from experiences of difficulty, but it's also experiences of freedom. The third noble truth is a truth. It's not a just after loads of lifetimes, and just if we're born in North India, and just if no. Like the first noble truth, so the third. Liberation. Regei chesed, we can say. That's taste of liberation. So it's a relative world. In the relative world, sorrow and pain, joy and liberation. Because of pain, there is freedom. Because of freedom, there is pain. Everything is like this. So I found a beautiful poem which is just right on for this retreat and this talk. And I'll tell you at the end, I won't read it all because it's a bit long, but I'll tell you only at the end who wrote it. And it's called Kindness. And it's just about this. Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment like salt in a weak soup. what you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go. So you know how desolate, means how empty, the landscape can be between the areas of kindness. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to gaze at bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, it is I you have been looking for. And then it goes with you everywhere, like a shadow or a friend. And it's written by a Palestinian woman called Naomi Nye, who lives in New York. Compassion, Chemla, is taste of kindness. It's our reaction or response when we meet life that we cannot control. We're born in a body. We're not in charge. No one asked us if we wanted to be born. At least no one asked me, maybe they asked you. They're not asking us if we want to die. Nobody asked us. Life, we cannot control. It controls us. It's bigger than us. And there, the response of compassion arises in our heart. Like Naomi said, we see the thread of our sorrow or our difficulty or our dukkha, we see it's part of a huge cloth, endless. But something very beautiful about the compassion, it joins us to the world. If we feel the compassion of an insect trying to cross from here to here, and we don't know if it's going to make it, a bird that's telling us something, our bodies that are complaining, everywhere we feel the struggles of life. Well, the beauties of life, but also the struggle of life. Everything is struggling to live. It touches our heart and we feel compassion. And as we feel compassion, we join it. Compassion, like all the Brahma Viharas, as I was saying in the last talk, is opening our relationship to be with all of life. It runs exactly parallel or together with awareness practice that shows us that we are connected out of not just a self, but part of. And that's the quote I gave you the other day, that love tells me I am everything and wisdom tells me I am nothing. Both of those join us to the world. So compassion here is not only a practice of kind of the heart responding and in some way helping or being with or making things a bit better, because it does help us, but it also joins us to everything. It's a liberating practice. I have a sweet little, another little quote here from actually, I can't remember who it's from. Maybe also William Blake. Little fly, your summer's play, your play in the summer, my thoughtless hand has brushed away. I hope you understand it. My thoughtless hand has brushed away this fly. Am not I a fly like you? Or are not you a man like me? For I dance and dream and sing till some blind hand shall brush my wing. Just the same. So compassion joins us to the world, gives us a bigger sense, a bigger view, lets us go in the big picture of the uncontrollable and the infinite life. But it's really about how we get up in the morning. Just like she said, Naomi, how we tie our shoes. Kindness is not theoretical. It's not just a sort of infinite practice. It's really down to earth, how I tie my shoes, how I get up in the morning, what is my attitude of heart when I go out of the street and meet Rehov Balfour. Anyway, how am I with this day? And it really is the opposite of anger. It's another way of living instead of anger and resistance, and it shouldn't be like that, and they don't know what to do, and it has to be stopped, and they're like them, and it's them, and they're like that, and wait, compassion. It shifts the view totally to another way of life. So it's not just a big, but it, in a way, the truth of the big down into the small moments of my life, that's what makes it alive. The truth of this moment with compassion makes this moment really alive. And it's partly of the vulnerability, a begiut chelanu, is important, that we don't ignore the first noble truth. I know that many of you have been going through quite a journey. I forgot the word, in Luna Park style, whatever. But you hear love and metta and kindness, and what happens is the heart comes and says, what's this? All these nice words. I'm angry. Leave me alone. I don't want to shut up. I don't want to. Don't pour a bosem on the chara. It's good to know. It's good to know that. That's because we have to be in touch with our vulnerability. There is our freedom. Our freedom is not shutting down dukkha. Our freedom is meeting vulnerability. Yes, we are vulnerable human beings in this body, born in a body. Yes, but that's part of our awakening. It's not a problem. It's a journey. It's an invitation to the mystery of life. We are vulnerable. Let's look at that. Let's start there. Instead of covering it over and trying to saying it shouldn't be like that and escaping from it and building all kinds of projecting it onto other people. And our vulnerability is we live because of vulnerability. We live in the moment. We live on the edge. And that really is a place where we wake up, living on the edge. So we keep exploring the boundaries of compassion, and I was talking about that too. Keep pushing the boundaries. I remember when I was a couple of years, I was in Varanasi, at least the first year I was in Varanasi is 1975-6. So I was living in the city. And I was faced with this every single day. I got up, got out of the door. How many beggars do I give money to? There's a whole line of them. What now? How many? When do I stop giving money? It's a challenge. What's my boundaries? And we're faced with it in a way all the time. Someone is giving us a hard time. Where's my boundary? Where do I put boundary? It's not that we shouldn't put boundary. There's no boss up there saying, if you're a Buddhist, you never put boundaries. No, it's not that. But if you're a Buddhist, you recognize where your boundaries are, you recognize your zone of safety or your limits, and you keep moving them. It's not that you shouldn't have boundaries. If someone's really hard to you or difficult to you, you shouldn't sort of put up with it all your life because I'm being a nice Buddhist. That's not, it's okay to say, I need to do this right now, or I need to leave. I need to leave my work because it's really a non-healthy place. Not if I'm a Buddhist, I have to put up with everything. So yes, you look after yourself, compassion to yourself, but the practice is, the boundaries can be played with. They're just the beginning. We play with them, we move them, we see that they're not fixed. So now we give to all the beggars, and tomorrow nobody. Lama? Kaha. That's what happens. But they're still playing with it rather than, I can't deal with this. No. Underneath is the self story. Who am I? Where my boundaries are about who am I? And our patterns, our habits, we need to watch them. We need to know them. We build our boundaries from sense of me and what I need and my limits and what I can manage with, what I can put up with, and then we keep opening those. And as we do that with compassion and with awareness, the me all the time gets a little bit softer, a little bit less solid. It's true that in a metta retreat, many of us felt a bit vulnerable because things come, we trigger the heart and stuff comes up, we sit quietly and memories come up, we have experiences that are difficult, and we can feel a little bit without protection, a little bit without a skin. A bit naked in this practice. It's sensitive. We have our boundaries, okay, but we can feel a little bit that the boundaries are being pushed in a retreat like this because we're meditating, we're in samadhi, we're using phrases, we're pushing things, we're shaking a little bit the known world, and in those places compassion can feel a little bit too much for me. I can't deal with it. I feel vulnerable, but we should understand that the seeing and the awareness, it takes us to a place which is still very, very valuable, even if we feel vulnerable. And that place is out of the automatic reactivity, haganatiyut, of daily life. And the example of being stuck in a traffic jam, pukak. Just I just gave it as a very small daily life example, but it's all the time. So we have compassion can take us out of that place. Mindful awareness can take us out of that place. Kindness can take us out of that place. And just have to understand what it's doing, how we do it. It's instead of something else. It's instead of automatically being protection. Haganatiyut, automati. Tuguvatiyut, automati. So even though we can feel a bit vulnerable, there's benefit in that. We can feel a little bit shaky, but it's really helpful because the other side is, I think, even more of a problem, which is in some sort of automat of survival mode. But what is there for us instead of the external chomot or shirion, the walls, the armor? I think professional language in English, you call it character armor, shield. How does the practice help us to feel safe and feel protected, even in times of vulnerability, without an external shield? And here we're talking about internal. And the internal shield or the internal protection is equanimity. And how do we notice it? How do we experience it? We experience it when we let go, even though we're not in control. Experiences happen. Small example, we're sitting in the plane, the door's shut. That's it. There's nothing we can do. Totally out of control. The doors are shut, and that's it. How do we feel? So, on the one hand, you can feel insecure. I lost control. I can't get out of here. I'm in. On the other hand, and this is my experience, okay, I can let go of any illusion of control now. Let it take me, this plane. The doors are shut, finished. I have no choice. I have no control anymore. I enjoy that. Just like, I don't have to bother anymore. So we experience equanimity as letting go into life, letting life take us, less of a personal me, what I need and what has to happen and what I want to change and what is not working for me, etc., etc. A sense that life is bigger than me, and actually, in a way, life isn't interested in me. You may think that's a challenging statement, but I think it's true. I don't know if it's true. You decide. Is life interested in us? I'm not sure. Life is just life. Does it really need Stephen or Simi? Is it saying, life is just life. It does its thing. So equanimity helps us to go to this place of letting go and feeling that we are together with everything in an ocean. And like this Indian image, how do you taste the ocean? You're a grain of salt. How do you taste what it's like to be to be salt? You jump into the ocean. You're a grain of salt. You ask, what is it like to be salt? You jump into the ocean. That's it. There's a lot of practices that help equanimity. Something about samadhi, we can feel that our samadhi is like the earth, our samadhi is like the air, our samadhi is like the ocean. We can feel that there is something under our practice that we're connected with something that just can absorb our personal stories, that doesn't care anymore about our personal stories. It's just the earth underneath. The earth doesn't care about our issues, relationships with our benzo or budzo. Does the earth care? Does the sky care? But there's something there that's, I know it sounds a bit simple, but there's something there which is actually important. That our meditation can be like the earth. That we connect with a place which actually has less caring about the story of me. And it's like, meditation is like the earth. It's one of the quotations from the suttas. The Buddha said, let your meditation be like the earth. And the earth is not worried or alarmed. Bahala is not alarmed by what happens. It's big enough. Mind you, I think the Buddha didn't say it today. He said it a few thousand years ago when probably the planet was assumed that the earth would be fine, never mind what we did, what humans did. Now I think he wouldn't have used that quote anymore. But there is a sense that we know the earth is vast and the sky is huge and the ocean is endless and it can absorb our stories. And we can feel inside us too more space, more openness, less, the story becomes less total and we're not closed inside the story. There's more space. And that space is important. That is the space that invites equanimity. Because somehow or other, if there's more space inside, challenges pass through us. Like glass, shakuf. It's not boundaries. I won't let in difficulty or pain or struggle. I won't keep it out. But it doesn't need to stick. That's equanimity. I can feel it. The Buddha's big ears in the statues of the Buddha were because he was listening. He was big enough, meaning like the earth, empty enough to be able to listen to the pains of the whole of life without being destroyed, without being knocked down by it. That's the feeling of equanimity. I can be with vulnerability, I can feel the pain of the world, it doesn't destroy me. Why? Because there's enough space. There is ocean, there is earth, there is. And it's something we can slowly, we can practice, we can build that. Every time we're connecting to breath and body, it's not the story. It's just life. And life says to us, be open. Be open. Equanimity is the fourth of the Brahma Viharas. And it is important because it kind of balances the other three. So metta, the love power, power of love, this movement of the heart. Karuna is the same power but touched by struggle and difficulty of life. Mudita is the joy. And equanimity, upekkha, is the balance that holds, that makes sure that we can feel all these big feelings of the heart, but something there is open and free, and it doesn't knock us down. I have one or two phrases here in English which are kind of giving the flavor of equanimity. The simplest one is, may I accept things as they are. It's really simple. Not so easy. But it's a phrase. In other words, it's a message. May I not be disturbed by the coming and going of events. Mm. my happiness or suffering are the result of conditions and how I am with them, and not my wishes for myself. There's a couple of examples, but the simplest one is just, may I accept things as they are? Things are as they are. It's a very deep, powerful message. And we've been learning it like all the Brahma Viharas, like we said right at the beginning, they are all already there in our practice, but in small doses. When we give, you know, the sense of Masheba Baruch Haba, welcoming what arises, that's already equanimity. It's like saying, may I accept things as they are. May I not be disturbed by coming and going of events that I have no control. What arises, fair enough, good enough, come, welcome. And what helps it in our practice is what I said before, the sense of being bigger than or freer than or not kind of busy with sorting out our experience to be more pleasant or more and less unpleasant. Not to be busy with that usual mind that says, I want it like this, I want it like that, it's not good enough, I'm missing this, I want this, I need that. That's also in the practice. And that leads to equanimity just as much. A sense of being bigger than Tovli Rali. And it's just what the quote at the beginning of William Blake. Our journey to discover the soul divine, the soul divine, you could say the big soul, is made of Tovli Rali, but looked at with a big equanimous awareness that can contain all of that, that can hold all of those dualities. So both compassion and equanimity are really needed, and especially needed in these difficult times. We are not in easy times. There's a lot of vulnerability everywhere, insecurity everywhere, uncertainty everywhere. We're really getting messages with the virus, which come right into this retreat. We can't, the retreat isn't another kind of, like I said, a wall. And we keep out all the risk. It goes right here, because we're part of the world. So the virus is just a good example, the corona, of how we're not in control of things. And what we learn from that is really important. But what we need in these times, especially, is compassion and equanimity. We need to stand steady when everything else, including everybody else, seems to be totally freaked out. Who's going to stand steady? It has to be us, because we're sitting here 10 days already, sitting in our place, sitting after sitting after sitting. And if that hasn't taught us how to be steady, we give up. It's us. We have to stand steady when everything seems to be shaky out in the world. And compassion is the heart touched by difficulty of others and of ourselves. And equanimity is the ability to stand steady in the midst of change. To surf the glosh, to surf the waves of change, and not to be knocked down by them. These are qualities which we manifest, because if we learn them, then we can practice them. We can bring them out into the world. We learn them, we appreciate qualities like love and compassion and steadiness, they're not things, qualities which we just need to collect. If we appreciate love, we love. If we appreciate steadiness, we are steady. And we can give it to others. We can just give it to the world. And there's a lovely story here that I like, from also from the tradition. One of the monks of the Buddha was going out into the village and he got thirsty. And he came to the well of the village, and there was a woman, untouchable woman, who was drawing water from the well. So the Buddha said, "Can you give me water? I'm thirsty." And the woman said, "I can't give you water because I'm untouchable." You know, the lowest Rama in India, the lowest caste. So they have loads of really terrible restrictions. She said, "I can't give you water because I'm an untouchable." He said, "I didn't ask about your caste. I asked for water." And it was just, this is again, one of these beautiful sentences that stay with me, you know. And she was touched. She burst into tears and she ran to the Buddha and said, "Your monks are amazing. I've totally fallen in love with your unbelievable monks. You're unbelievable people." And the Buddha said to her, "You didn't fall in love with the monks. You fell in love with kindness." And how do you fall in love with kindness? Be kind. So these are the compassion and the equanimity are qualities of, you could call them the bodhisattva, or qualities of enlightened action in the world. And they are instead of helplessness, giving up, blame, anger, anxiety, a sense of being paralyzed, "I don't know what to do, it's all too much for me." Exactly those qualities, compassion and equanimity, are the kind of powers that we learn that activate us and help us to go out in the world. So we can be steady in the middle of difficulty, and we can bring our heart out there. They're not the only qualities, there's wisdom and many others, but compassion and equanimity are really important. So just to finish, I want to give one sentence descriptions of all the four Brahmaviharas. And I just found that in a little petic that I wrote them a long time ago, I just thought I would give them. So metta is, I love the world. Karuna is, compassion is, I cry with the world. Mudita is, I laugh and dance with the world. And upekkha, or equanimity, is, I live, or I live the existence of this world. I exist in this world. So I'll finish with a quote, a Zen quote, which kind of says it all. What is the heart of a wise Dharma practitioner? A gentle breeze under the sky. A gentle wind under the sky. So we can feel the feeling of that. Thank you. Let's take a couple of minutes. So it's time for walking. I'll put a little petek tomorrow on the board with the name and the name of the woman and the name of the poem, Kindness, so you can just look it up in the internet.